Ugliness reign. I'm gonna tell it to the north, gonna tell it to the south, gonna tell it to the east, and gonna tell it to the west. Now there's only one, Mad Mark After Dark, the man that hates everything except the real thing, coming to you once again, right here and right now. So you better listen, because I always tell it like it is. Always have, and always will. And tonight is certainly no different than any other night. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome a very special guest to the program, Ross the Boss.
Bobby is a local.
In New York City and showed promise as a piano and violin prodigy. But when you first touched the guitar, your life totally changed and you found your instrument. Was there any defining moment or influence at that point in time that led you to the guitar?
Yeah, well, the first thing that really hit me, that clobbered me, was seeing the Beatles on Ed Sullivan's show. And I mean, that really dates me back, but when I saw those guys really young, but when I saw rock and roll on the TV, I mean, it just transfixed me. I mean, then I was hooked. I knew I loved rock and roll. I loved rock and roll radio. I loved, you know, all that music. And then in 67 was the year of the rock guitar player, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
That every band had to have an amazing rock and roll player, a guitar player. You know, Fleetwood Mac had Peter Green.
Mm-hmm.
Cream, you know,
Clapton,
Eric Clapton, Jeff Beck. I mean, all these guys were fucking tremendous. I mean, you know, Peter Frampton. All these guys were there were countless others. Plus, I was infatuated with the blues growing up. B.B. King becoming my favorite guitar player of all time.
Are you ever going to do a blues album?
Yes, I will.
Because I really want to hear that, for sure.
That's being talked about right now.
Mm-hmm.
Album, you know, but just getting to do it. I mean, you know, that's that's another issue. But what's going to happen? B.B. King. So the guitar was the center point. In the summer of '67, I was working. I think I was in the dish boy, in the cooking staff of this camp up in New Hampshire, and I was just that summer was, you know, Jimi Hendrix was. The Doors, I mean, it was just Jorma Kekkonen and the Jefferson Airplane.
Definitely.
I mean, all these guys, they were just all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I was just bombarded by guitar playing. And then 69, it just, as the years went by, it just, you know, the 2 years, and then 69 was really the year, actually, I could say. 1969, that was the year. That summer, I started playing guitar when I was 13. And then when I was 15, that's right, when I was 15 up there, in New Hampshire, that's when that summer, that's when the whole thing kicked in on me. That's when I really started playing guitar. I really got these concepts, you know, like the synapses of your brain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was just like, it just came to me, and just the way I played and how aggressive I could be and how emotive I could be and how I could express myself through the instrument. And I was just, you know, that was it. Once I realized that what I could do with that guitar, how I could put my emotions across without saying a word, like the blues guys or B.B. King, it was just one note, two notes.
Oh, yeah.
You know, once I mastered that, that was it.
It was great.
You know? And I have people saying, I met you when you were 17. I met you. You were I knew it, you know. People said they knew it when they heard me play. So
mm-hmm.
it's great that I can still do it, you know, and I just try to get better every day, and I wake up in a positive attitude, and that's when I realized it, when I was very young.
What do you say we bring him on, ladies and gentlemen? The Regal Theater proudly presents the great B.B. King. Let me hear you.
She got real crazy legs. You upset me, baby. Yes, you upset me, baby. Well, I like being hit by a falling tree. Woman, what you do to me? Yeah, she's not too tall. Complexion is fair. Man, she knocked me off the way she wear hair. You upset me, baby. Yes, you upset me, baby. Well, I like being hit by a falling tree. Woman, what you do to me? Yes! She wear hair. You upset me, baby. Yes, you upset me, baby. Well, I like being hit by a falling tree. Woman, what you do to me? Well, now I'm tired to the scribe. Hard to start. Better stop now because I've got a weak heart. You upset me, baby. Yes, you upset me, baby. Well, I like being hit by a falling tree. Woman, what you do to me?
I mean, Peter Townsend was an incredible, incredible influence on me. I became the rhythm guitar player that I was through, you know, listening to him and realizing that the secret of my strength was the way I played rhythm, not the way I played lead. And that's what most of these lead guitar players go, where they go wrong.
No, I agree with that, too.
Their rhythm attack is just wimpy, because mm-hmm. I just spent my life listening to Keith Richards and Pete Townsend, and so
yeah, all great rhythm players.
Not, right,
you got to develop that as well as leads.
Right,
that's for
Chuck
sure.
Chuck Berry and all these guys, Dugganway and Bo Diddley.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you got to lay down a carpet of rhythm as a guitar player. And, you know, it just sounds like shit when you can't. It really does. And I still see it. I mean, I don't care what kind of music you play. I think it just sounds like shit when a guitar player can't do that. Especially if he's the only guitar player, though.
Yeah, well, you gotta develop both skills, for sure.
Right. To be the complete guitar player, you know,
mm-hmm.
you have to have touch, you have to have rhythm, you have to have melody, you have to have aggression, you have to have...
Mm-hmm.
Speed, you have to have You have to be able to fill spaces when it's slow. Like these guys, I know. I mean, a lot of guys, they just can't fill spaces.
Oh, I've seen it many times.
Yeah. It sucks,
especially on the underground New York scene, for sure.
Right. Yeah, and it sounds like a pile of fucking shit. But you know, I'm not. You know, I'm here. I do my thing. I'm just happy to play.
I don't have to be here, you know. I don't have to show up here. With my best financial holdings, I could have been basking in the sun in Florida. This is just a hobby for me. Nothing, you hear? A hobby.
We were a bunch of knuckleheads. We were from the Bronx.
Mm-hmm.
All of us were from the Bronx, and one guy's from Brooklyn. But we were kind of like a cover band, a quasi cover band that would play some original music, you know, our one of our guys, Parker, had a had songs. He was a songwriter, and pretty good, you know. And then we were like, then we all moved up to New Paltz, New Paltz University, and we kind of like, we're like a house party band, and you know, whenever we could play, we played all over the place up there, and we kind of had a reputation, and it was a lot of fun back then.
Well, I always compared the Dictators to a New York version of what Motorhead was. And always very has cool. been. It was very, very similar, at least live, stylistically, for sure.
Proto-punk, yes.
Yeah.
Totally, 100% with that.
Well, talking about Total Crud, you first met Andy Chernoff in 1973 while playing in Total Crud at a house party. The both of you formed the Dictators. Can you tell me about your first meeting with Andy, and when did you realize you wanted to form a band with him?
Well, I knew about Andy because he was, you know, my friend would tell me about him, and he was writing for Crawdaddy. I think he had his own. I don't think maybe Crawdaddy, but he was in the rock writer. He was in that rock business. He was a writer, and he had his own. He started his own fanzine called Teenage Wasteland Gazette.
Yeah.
And it was really cool. And then he put me in there, and he started writing about me. And then one day he, you know, we're talking, and you know, I think let's form a band. You know, you want to do it? You want to form a band? I go, yeah, you know, because I knew Total Crud was kind of limiting, and I wanted to. I kind of liked and really loved the MC5 and the Flaming Groovies and stuff like that, and you know. That side of the whole thing. It wasn't really metal.
Big town. friend, fireman's friend, fireman's friend, fireman's friend, fireman's friend, fireman's friend, fireman's friend, oh yeah, fireman's friend, 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 fireman's friend.
The band toyed with so many different names. Like, for example, Beat the Meatles, Fireman's Friend, Cancer of the Dick, and the New York Yankees. Well, who actually came up with the Dictators as the name of the band?
You know what? I think one of the names that was in that pile of names, I think Andy had a whole pile of names that he liked and people thought of, and So we saw the Dictators, and then we said, you know, that's the name of the band.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. That's the name. That's our name. Just like when Joey and I heard of Manowar. That was...
Yeah.
When Doc came out and said, well, how about Manowar? I go, Joey, and I go, come on!
Electra Asylum Records and KROQ invite you to hear The Dictators. The Dictators will overpower you. See and hear The Incredible Dictators live in concert at The Whiskey, Monday through Thursday, July 25th through 28th. And by special arrangement with Electra Asylum Records, K-Rock listeners have the rare opportunity to see The Dictators for only a buck. That's right, Monday and Tuesday nights, the 25th and 26th, the 11:30 Dictators show at The Whiskey will be only a buck to the first 300 people to mention The Rocks, and the first 50 each night will also receive the new Dictators LP. It's all for you from Electra Asylum Records and KROQ.
Smoke. Woo! Cook it out, baby, daddy! come back from Minneapolis. Well, I just beat Vern Gagne and Dick the Bruiser down there. They know it. You could bring on Haystack Balloon, Eric Bloom. I don't care who you bring here, Dada. Rainbow, Strongbow, they're all going under the thunder of Manitoba.
March 29th, 1974, the Dictators played a show at a bar called Popeyes, right here in Sheepshead Bay in Brooklyn, New York, with a band called The Dogs. Well, as the Dictators played on, Andy asked Richard Bloom, one of your roadies, to join the band on stage to sing a cover version of the Trogs classic Wild Thing. The crowd went absolutely nuts, and bottles and bar stools were thrown. It was the night Handsome Dick Manitoba was created. Did you realize at this point in time that Handsome Dick would become a full-fledged member of the Dictators? And did you think that you would still be performing with him some 40 plus years later?
Well, that night was just one of those nights that listen, the band was good. When Andy was singing lead, you know, we were okay. I mean, we were a good band. you know, definitely a good band. I mean, people liked it, but people, it didn't, it, we weren't, you know, busting shit up. We weren't, how do you say, I don't know, we weren't breaking through to the other side, you know? And as soon as Manitoba came up there, as soon as Richie came up and he did Wild Thing, I saw the expressions of the people that we were playing, had been playing to for a while, and it was like, they just seemed the apocalypse when he went on stage. This guy, it was like, if you knew him back then, it was unbelievable, really. The place went fucking berserk, and it was like a Tuesday night or something, you know, it was just Brooklyn. It was just one of those nights, but it became a legendary night. You know, I have a lot of people say they were there. It's like, you know, I was there Game 6, World Series.
I wish I was, but I wasn't. Yeah. I admit it.
And Eric Emerson was there. I know that. Chris Stein of Blondie was there. I know that.
Mm-hmm.
But that night, it was just unreal. When Richard Blum became Handsome Dick Manitoba, it was like, wow. You know?
We'll be right back.
March of 76, there was a big brawl between Handsome Dick, Manitoba, and Wayne County, which resulted in Richard being brought to the hospital with 16 stitches and a broken collarbone. Yep. The Dictators were blacklisted by Wayne.
We were blacklisted. Imagine that.
Mm-hmm.
Our singer was nearly killed, but we were blackballed. That really got
I mean, were you there during this? Cause
no, I wasn't at TV's that night.
Mm-hmm.
I got the call, and I was gonna issue a fatwa. Lucky I didn't. I held my anger, because I'll stick my friends on them. I was gonna kill somebody. I was gonna have someone killed, honestly, and I'm glad I didn't do it, because it would have been horrible, you know. But it was one of those unfortunate things, and since then. Jane and Richard have become really good friends, and when they kissed and made up, but he nearly called me. She nearly caused me my careers.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
People, when you're on stage, you have that mic stand. You could kill somebody with it, you know, and you're throwing down on someone, and I know Matt, I know Richard was a uncouth, fucking obnoxious drunk, but. It was terrible.
How does it feel?